Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
Welcome to this week's edition of Says You, a holiday weekend, our most preempted show of the year. The chances are you'll never hear this.
I just got to say something to you.
Yes.
Is this April 1st? Is that an April Fool's joke or something like that?
But don't worry. Just because we're unacknowledged, that doesn't mean we won't maintain our intellectual dignity.
Is it a noun or a verb?
Yes.
Yeah.
If you want to think of it that way, you could call this show a repeat. We prefer to think of it as review.
Who uses the OED to cook?
It explains British food, doesn't it?
Yeah, right.
So as you carve, unwrap, and carol, we hope you'll listen to our trip to Youngstown, Ohio, is next up on Says You, right after this.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Noor Rahm. A bomb exploded in a Roman Catholic church during Christmas Mass in Nigeria today. Officials say at least 25 people were killed. An Islamist group seeking to impose Sharia law is claiming responsibility for the attack, as well as other explosions in Nigerian cities today. The BBC's Martin Plout reports. And we hope to have that report later on. The Vatican denounced the bombings in Nigeria as a sign of cruelty and absurd and blind hatred. The statement was released after the Pope delivered his annual Christmas message to tens of thousands of people in St. Peter's Square. He urged an end to the bloodshed in Syria and a resumption of negotiations to bring peace to Israel and Palestinians. In the Middle East, hundreds of people gathered in St. Catherine's Church to celebrate Christmas Mass. Officials say the turnout this year was the highest in a decade. They estimate that 100,000 people came to Bethlehem this weekend. Britain's religious leaders deliver their Christmas sermons, and Larry Miller reports from London they were quite political this year.
The Anglican leader, the Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, linked last summer's riots in Britain with corporate greed.
Whether it's an urban rioter mindlessly burning down a small shop that serves his community, or a speculator turning his back on the question of who bears the ultimate cost for his acquisitive adventures in the virtual reality of today's financial world, the picture is of atoms spinning apart in the dark.
Meanwhile, the leader of Britain's Roman Catholics, the Archbishop of Westminster, Vincent Nichols, asked his congregation to pray for 50 Palestinian families in Bethlehem he says are fighting to save their homes from the Israeli security barrier. For NPR News, I'm Larry Miller in London.
A suicide bomber struck northern Afghanistan today. Authorities say 19 people were killed, including a member of the National Parliament. An army soldier who survived a suicide bombing in Afghanistan was shot at his homecoming party in Southern California last week. Lieutenant Richard Lawhead is with the San Bernardino Police Department. He says it appears that 22-year-old Christopher Sullivan was trying to break up a fight Friday night when he was shot twice in the back.
There was probably, from what I understand, 30 to 40 people attending. An altercation broke out, and shots were fired, and the victim was actually struck twice during the altercation.
Family members say Sullivan was left paralyzed and in critical condition. The gunman took off before the police arrived. Cuban civil defense forces are searching for Haitian migrants missing after their boat sank yesterday. Cuban state television reports 38 people are confirmed dead. It's not clear where the Haitians were trying to go. This is NPR News. Hackers claim they've stolen 200 gigabytes of data from the U.S. security think tank Stratfor. Members of the hacking movement known as Anonymous posted a link on Twitter to what it said was Stratfor's secret client list, including Goldman Sachs, the U.S. Army, and the U.S. Air Force. The group claimed it stole email and credit card information. By way of evidence, it posted the email address, phone number, and credit card number of a Homeland Security employee. He told the Associated Press he had no warning, and the group took money he didn't have. The Coast Guard is coming to the rescue of ice-bound Nome, Alaska. NPR's Martin Costi has more.
Nome is facing a fuel shortage after a big storm prevented it from receiving its usual delivery by barge in the fall. Now the city is counting on a Russian tanker to deliver 1.5 million gallons of fuel oil and other petroleum products in January. But first, a 300-mile path will have to be cut through the ice pack off Alaska's western coast. The Coast Guard has offered its one functioning icebreaker, a polar research vessel called the USS Healy, to clear the way. The Healy is the Coast Guard's only functioning icebreaker right now. The rest of the fleet is being mothballed or repaired in Seattle. Martin Costi, NPR News, Seattle.
One might call it the Occupy Museums Project. Several major museums are gathering the buttons, posters, and documents of the Occupy Wall Street protest to archive for historic preservation. The Smithsonian's National History of American History sent staffers to Zuccotti Square in New York during the encampment to pick up materials. It said it's part of its tradition of documenting how Americans participate in democracy. I'm Noor Rahm, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Intel Corporation in recognition of NPR's ongoing commitment to science and technology coverage.
Welcome to Says You, a game of bluff and bluster, words and whimsy.
Says You in Youngstown, Ohio is made possible by the good folks at WYSU-FM in Youngstown.
Now, join our panelists and your host, Richard Schur.
Thank you. Thank you. From the Ohio Room in Kilcawley Center on the campus of Youngstown State University, welcome to Says You, a simple game with words played by two teams, the first of which sits stereo right. He's a Midwesterner by birth and by inclination, Mr. Flash Wiley. There's not a Midwestern bone in his body, Mr. Tony Khan. And she's traveled through thousands of miles, illness, everything, just to be here with a smile on her face. So she's a Midwesterner now, Miss Francine Akbar. Where's the captain this week?
The guy to the right.
No bones.
Mr. Khan.
Free range, Tony.
To my left, team two, the brother I never had and always feared, Arnie Raceman. The pride of all the Lions, Miss Paula Lyons. And the sassy sprite with the penchant for punning, Miss Carolyn Faye Fox. Who dares lead on this occasion?
Well, in order to keep consistency here, I will be the captain.
This side of the table. It's right. The first time in 10 years I realized I'm stuck between two animals. I forgot about
the name.
Well, fox and lions. It's there. I don't know why it didn't occur
to me.
This
took you 10 years?
Yeah.
That's not up to your usual speed.
Really. Carolyn, well, captain. Correct answers are worth 10 points, so whatever fraction thereof deemed appropriate, we always advise our new listeners to grab a pen and paper. Let's begin with a round of famous Ohioans. By the way, is it Ohioans or Ohioans?
Ohioans.
Well, there we go. Then let's begin with a round of famous Ohioans.
Yes.
Hey. From the following ridiculous puns, clues, and references, please tell me the famous Ohioan I have in mind. Try this one, Carolyn. Famous Ohioan brought to mind by the clue, Morrison's Musicians Remain.
Morrison's Musicians Remain. Are we talking about Jim Morrison?
Might be.
We might be.
I don't want that. You want something with Doors in it?
Maybe.
Well, maybe yes or no.
Morrison's Musicians Remain. Doors left.
Musicians, Doors
Day.
Doors Day is exactly right.
Doors Stay.
Would you care to...
Doors Stay.
Doors Stay, right. Yes, yeah. That's right. Morrison's Musicians are the Doors.
Cincinnati, or just outside Cincinnati or whatever.
Did I get booed on the first question?
You got booed on the first question. She's
I'll
not from
you,
here?
Her original name was not Doris Day, was it?
No, it's Von Koppelhoff.
Doris Von Koppelhoff. That's right.
Do we get extra points?
No, you don't get extra points.
All right.
Doris Day is exactly right. Try this one, Tony.
I'm going to take a wild guess and say Marlena Dietrich.
I'm so tempted to hit the bell, but no.
Right.
Try this one, Tony. The secluded valley where the outhouse is. Famous Ohioan brought to mind by the secluded valley where the outhouse is.
So the outhouse is out back, right?
Right. Where the outhouse is, backyard.
Just heard it in the
audience. Oh, yeah.
Try not to scream.
Secluded Valley.
We know it.
Oh.
Rudy Valley.
No. Nope. That's Vermont.
Right, yes.
Okay, you got it. I get it.
Just want you to know that. Sorry.
Got it.
The other side has it. Well, you know. Do we have a stumper?
W.C. Fields.
That'd be good if he was coming.
Is W.C. Fields from Ohio?
No, that's a nice one, though.
Wow, I loved it. I'm going to give you points just because I
small
love
small oversight.
Yes.
I really
personally,
like
I'd rather
it,
be in Philadelphia.
But,
no.
Okay, Secluded Valley.
Secluded Valley where the outhouse is. Another term for outhouse might help.
Yes.
Lou?
No, not Lou.
Okay.
John? Secluded John. Valley where the outhouse is.
I don't think
is.
They're going to get it.
Secluded Valley.
No, I'm going to go to the other side.
John Glenn.
John Glenn is the secluded.
How is that a secluded valley?
Glenn. A Glenn is a secluded valley.
So sorry, a secluded valley is where the outhouse is a John Glenn. Yes, that's what that is. Mm-hmm. Try this one, Arnie. Famous Ohioan brought to mind by the clue. Think Aaron has a book in him?
Aaron? A-A-R-O-N?
Think Aaron has a book in him?
Has
a book in him.
Aaron as in Moses?
No.
No.
Think Aaron.
Spelling?
Oh. Anyone? Don't say it out loud. Anyone in the audience know?
Aaron.
Ooh,
Aaron
I got him.
Think Aaron has a book in him?
What Aaron?
Oh, and everyone knows this person. I'm absolutely certain of that.
Yeah, but the clue isn't good.
The clue is terrible.
All I can think of is Hank Aaron, and that's not it.
No, there are other ways to look at Aaron.
Other ways to look at Aaron. Is it a first name?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a first name.
Aaron.
Come on, guys.
Aaron.
I gave them a hint. I'll give them.
Aaron Spelling? Aaron Spelling?
It's quiet up there.
Yeah. Not getting
I'll have to go to the audience. Anyone in the audience know?
Wilbur Wright,
yes, is exactly right.
Where does Aaron come in?
Think it. Aaron Burr.
Burr,
has a
right.
Wilbur
Wright.
Wilbur Wright. Wow. Okay,
yes,
come on up and take my chair.
Yep.
And if you think that was bad, wait till you hear this one.
Remember, Francine's not feeling it.
Try this one, Francine. Famous Ohioan brought to mind by Tinted Bassets.
Tinted Bassets?
Yes.
Something about hounds.
Hounds yes. is
hound,
right.
Hound. Dye. Dye?
Not dye.
Color.
But you're getting there.
Color.
Shady Downs.
Henna.
Shaded.
Here.
Tinted.
Does he have it? Does Arnie?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, right. Once again, the other side always gets it.
Tinted hounds.
Oh, I don't think they're going to get it.
Hounds.
They've got the hounds part.
Yeah, you got it?
You got it?
Oh. Yes, I'm sure now that it gave it to the audience. I may have to go to the other side.
All right,
other side.
Hugh Downs.
Hugh Downs is right.
Oh.
Hued hounds is exactly right. Tinted Bassets is hued hounds.
These are really
hounds.
Hard, Richard.
They're very hard.
Yes.
Try this one, Paula. Parisian street named for Doonesbury's quarterback.
So it's going to be a rue in it, right?
Yeah.
Ruby D.
Ruby D is exactly right. Very good. And I saved the most despicable one of all for Flash.
Why not?
Flash, what famous Ohioan is brought to mind by the clue, all fortune cards must go?
All fortune cards?
Yeah. All fortune cards must go.
It starts with this.
Sale. Something about sale.
Well, a kind of sale, yeah.
Sales. Soupy sale.
Soupy sale.
No. I think Soupy Sales is from Detroit. I'm not sure.
Fortune cards.
Tarot?
There you go.
Tarot. Tarot sale.
Tarot out.
I think it's more a kind of sale.
Tarot blows out.
So it could be a rummage sale.
Clearance.
There you go.
Clarence
Darrow. Clarence Darrow
is exactly right.
There we go. All right.
Yes. All fortune cards must go is, of course, the Clarence Darrow.
The sad part was that I've been thinking Clarence Darrow for about a half a minute and thinking, no, that can't possibly be it. Where the hell does a Clarence come in?
Well, you know, I should I give them the extra credit one that I just thought was too despicable for words?
Sure.
Ah, there's an affirmative from the audience.
Is this a jump ball?
Try this. Yep. Is a jump ball. First one to get it, okay? 10 points, the first one that gets it. This is so bad, I'm almost ashamed of myself, but not quite.
Not quite.
Famous Ohioan brought to mind by In the Manner of a Yellow Springs, Ohio College.
Well,
In the Manner of a Yellow Springs, Ohio College. Famous Ohioan brought to mind.
Something style.
No. I'm going to ask.
Alan Alda?
No. I don't think I got to get it, but I am going to give the audience a shot at it. Audience? Annie Oakley is right. Antioch is the college. Antioch Lee.
I was getting to
That's a stretch.
Yeah, because that's anti Oakley.
I told you it was fairly despicable, but the audience seemed to want it.
So it's going to be that kind of night.
In the meantime, shall we go on to round two? Round two is played with a little musical help from our friends, the Revival Quintet. It's the first of the Says You Bluffing rounds. Carolyn, each of you will receive a card defining a word. Only one will have the actual definition. The other two have blank cards. Those poor souls have a few seconds to make up a definition on the spot, good enough to fool Tony's team. 10 points up for grabs to Tony if he can find the bluffer, or to you, Carolyn, if he can't. A few seconds to come up with a definition for the word welve. W-H-E-L-V-E. Welve. Folks? This is Richard. As the year draws to a close, we'd like to take a moment and thank all the folks who came out last year to join us for a live taping of Says You. From the warm waters of the Pacific to the chilly shores of Booth Bay Harbor, Maine, from San Francisco to Lake Champlain, everywhere we went, you were great. We hope to see you in the new year when we return to Boston, California, and wherever else our travels take us. We'll post next fall schedule early this spring with the hope that we can get close enough to you to entice you to come and play. And to all, we wish you the best for the holiday season and for the new year from all of us at Says You. Says You returns after this from home. Thank you. The Revival Quintet. Evan Hetrick on sax, Cliff Barnes on the piano, Jim Richley on drums, and Jared Craig on the bass. We've had a few minutes with the word welve. We'll go first to Carolyn Fay Fox.
Welve. It's not how elves give birth. But I thought that, but no. No, what yes. It really is, it's something you can do it in the microwave or in the fridge. It's what you do when you run out of Tupperware or plastic wrap or foil. It's when you cover something up with an upside-down bowl, you know, bowl of pudding or cookie dough or whatever, you know, and put it in the refrigerator. You don't see it on the Food Network, but you can welve at home in your own kitchen. Welve yourself.
Would you like to give us a definition now?
You cover up a bowl with an upside-down.
Is it a noun or a verb?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a noun.
I mean,
down.
Is it too well, or it is
too
well?
Too
well. Too well.
To take like one bowl and put it over another bowl, kind of thing.
Over another bowl or over a plate. You know, if you're microwaving something, you don't want to splatter.
Oh, okay.
It, you know,
to cover something over it. with a you turn a bowl upside down and cover. Okay, Arnie, welve.
Well, it is a verb, and I didn't know there was such a thing as this. But you know how they shave a poodle, so it's got fur in the front and a little fur on his tail. And
like a topiary.
Yeah, like a topiary. It's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is. It's to welve is to shape like a topiary or to shape into topiary patterns. And,
but on an animal?
On an animal or on a plant or on a bush or a shrub. On anything. It's the act of welving, which is to shape into other shapes.
You know,
somewhere in there.
If the third definition is anyone like the first two.
To shape into other shapes.
To shape into other shapes is to welve. Cut something. To give someone a mohawk would be to welve.
Is a good example.
Okay, fine. To shape into other shapes. Mm-hmm. Paula, what say you?
Well, obviously it's an old verb.
Yes.
To welve. And what it means is to prepare fragile goods for transport by filling in all of the spaces in the packing box or crate with cushioning substances. So I'm sure in the old days, what was it? Probably wood shavings and rags and stuff. Now
no,
it's
was
styrofoam.
Wooden,
you know,
peanuts, I think.
Wooden peanuts. Right. George Washington's teeth.
Right. did you say to prepare fragile goods for transport?
Yeah, for transport by filling in all the spaces. That's when you're welving.
That's a verb.
You do that before you do any wrapping.
To prepare them before destruction by the Postal Service.
Yeah. Or even by UPS.
Before somebody says, fragile, what's fragile?
Fragile.
No.
So one of these is right. How about that?
Yeah.
Whoa.
That's an amazing thing.
It's either to prepare fragile goods for transport, to shape like a topiary, or to cover something up with an upside-down bowl. That is welving, one of those three, believe it or not. Tony, the choice is yours.
I'd like to begin with a little family history.
Okay.
My father, in order to test the consistency of a chocolate pudding, which is one of his favorite desserts, used to take the bowl of chocolate pudding, turn it upside down, and then jiggle it in his palm. That guaranteed that it was solid and that he was also the only person who would eat it. We used to call that my father going crazy. But apparently, there's another word for it. He was welving. He was welving. I like that. I think.
But it's none of these.
Yes, no, it's upside down.
The
turn
the pudding
down
thing.
In the bowl.
See, he said think so. I just have this sense that it's about more the idea of shaving into shapes.
But Arnie was shapeless himself.
Strongest clue.
I know. The ground seemed to be slipping from underneath. And first it was topiary, then it was French poodles, then it was God knows.
But I think that in there is something about shaping.
Welve me an elephant.
Yeah, kind of like hewing a shape. I really didn't buy Carolyn's at all. But what do you say, Fred?
I think we should make this unanimous, which is,
you're going to preparing fragile goods.
Right, exactly.
It's going to be a long night.
What's great is that once we know the definition, we will realize that we have all welved, and I think that we'll know what to describe it.
You are the captain.
Just to argue for the concept of packing. Mm-hmm. The other two made less sense to me than that one did, but all of them made no sense.
I'll grant you that.
And Paula is a very, very persuasive bluffette.
That's true. She is. So that would take you away from her.
Right. But. You know, as the captain, I have to show the kind of leadership we normally see in Washington.
Yes.
So and I'm just going to, out of thin air, take an upside down action and say that it's number one. It's Carolyn.
Tony has staunchly and firmly said that to welve is to cover something over with an upside-down bowl. Is that, in fact, what welving is?
If only.
Yes.
His analogy would hold true, because to welve is to cover with an upside-down vessel.
Oh!
Darn!
Mr. Khan, congratulations.
Your father would be proud of you.
I truly believe deep down my father was not nuts.
He touched you. I love it.
Let's go on to round three, a round of what's the difference. Carolyn, what's the difference between a bilge and a sump?
A bilge? Well, I have a sump pump in my basement. I do not have a bilge pump. Maybe I should, given the way things are going. Bilge is on a ship,
and?
I believe, and sump is on dry land.
It's just that simple.
Very good.
10 points.
Very good, Charlie.
It's just that simple. A bilge is, in fact, in a ship. Tony, what's the difference between wherefore and therefore?
Wherefore and therefore?
Yes.
Well, let's see. Therefore means as a consequence of, in other words, it follows logically that wherefore art thou, Romeo?
No, missing people.
Wherefore art thou? What is the cause?
You know something?
Yes,
he's right.
Wherefore is the cause.
Very good. That's true. Yes. Wherefore? Wherefore asks the question, for what purpose, to what end? Therefore answers the question, for that reason. So that's the difference. Try this one, Arnie.
All right.
Mm-hmm. What's the difference between a bistro and a cafe?
Probably the amount on the check. I mean, that's so.
Oh, without doubt.
Yeah. Without bistro. Doubt. Are you spelling bistro with a final T?
Because you can.
Yes, you can.
No, B-I-S-T-R-O and cafe.
Well, you
accent aigu.
Answer to this.
Yeah, well, a cafe is lighter fare.
Yeah.
Coffee, tea, perhaps a breakfast,
and a bistro is a full meal.
Not necessarily. That's not the difference. That's not the distinction that the.
Now, what would the OED know about
bistro
food?
Serve wine.
Yeah, what would the OED know about French?
The bistro serve wine, and the cafe does not.
That is a large part of it, but it's not about serving so much.
Is it about
the amount of food?
I have a theory.
Is it?
Wait
a minute. Is bistro a place where you also get a little entertainment?
No.
A cafe is breakfast. A bistro opens at night.
No, I think Tony might have a theory.
This is purely a theory. It's well known that after the revolution, there were an awful lot of Russians who spent time in Paris, and I happen to know that the Russian word for fast is bistro.
Yeah, bistro.
So I'm wondering if bistro are places where you get served fast, and a cafe, not necessarily, you can linger.
That is an absolutely wonderful analysis. It's completely wrong.
I am impressed.
I am impressed. I'm going to give you guys 7 points.
I think we deserve more points.
The audience want to take a shot at this?
No, we said alcohol.
We brought that up.
From the back of the room, yes, purchase.
Purchase?
By definition, a cafe is a coffee house or restaurant. When you add a wine shop or bar or food sales element, then you've got yourself a bistro.
What?
Audience, what do you think? How many points for them?
I mean,
God.
No. Three?
Nine, yeah.
I'm going to give you 7 points. Be all grateful, right. You know, or try this one, Francine. And I'll be just as hard on you as I was on them.
Thank you.
What's the difference between frosting and icing?
Well,
I have to say that my cousin Pam gave me this question, and she gave me the answer. So I was, thanks, Pam.
Well, one possibility is that one is cooked.
Well, one can be cooked.
A boiled frosting.
Which one would you say could be cooked?
Butter.
No, that was a great guess. No, that's not right.
So what about one goes just on top of the
oh, you know, that is a good point.
And
you
the,
frost
the
a cupcake and you ice
layered.
A cake.
Other way.
Ooh.
Does
no.
it do with degree of coverage?
No, but that's a one. You're going to get points just
for
the
guess.
We already
got the 7 points, right? Yeah.
No,
we're
not
getting
yet.
Into yeah. some real.
Let's keep rolling for the.
Some real refinements of cooking
right.
here.
Frosting now, and icing.
No, but, icing is can be confectionate sugar and not much else.
No,
right?
According to the dictionary, we're not going in the right direction. Anybody in the audience
sugar?
Want to take
Are
a shot?
Are we in sugar? Types of sugar?
Something cooked to the hardball stage? With
no.
a caramel?
Nah,
what,
that's
what,
fudge.
Anyone in the audience want to take a shot? No, let me read what the dictionary... This is going to come right out of the dictionary, so argue with
yeah,
Webster.
It's that bistro thing that we still don't understand.
Yeah, still don't yeah. get
yes. Frosting is a sugary substance powdered to resemble frost.
Who uses the OED to cook?
Yep.
Icing, okay. they say, is the process of encrusting with a sugary glaze, and that's where the cooking part comes in. And you were right.
No.
I invite everyone from the audience, from the listening audience, to write in and tell us why this definition is wrong.
Hey, Richard,
I can't believe
I'm happy to take the 7 points and keep rolling.
You're going to have to answer to Betty Crocker.
I'm perfectly
just
prepared.
On your conscience.
I am perfectly prepared. Paula, what's the difference between a plain and a prairie?
A plane is in the air.
Well, then let's make it P-L-A-I-N instead. What's the difference between a plain and a prairie?
I think, well, Arnie's from the prairie part of the world, but I mean...
Ain't no little dogs on
right,
the plane.
Right. Yeah, there are no plain dogs, just prairie dogs.
I think a plane can even be between mountains. A prairie, it seems always to me that it's a matter of size, like these prairies go on forever.
Sort of plains, don't they?
Well,
I don't know if that's it. I'm a city girl.
It is described as a very large area. That's true.
But there are
other elements.
I assume plain has much more vegetation.
It's flatter.
Than a prairie.
It's flatter.
Which
a prairie
is flatter?
A plain is flatter.
That is one of the major elements. You're almost there. That's
okay.
Your 8 points
flatter.
There.
A plain is
flat.
And a prairie is scrubbier.
A prairie undulates. That's the one distinction. And the other distinction?
Grassy plains, it can be grassy plains,
right? In a prairie,
you don't. You don't have grass.
You know what? I'm going to give them 9 points because you're almost right. You got it a little mixed up at the end. It's the prairie that is the grassland. By definition, a prairie is a grassland.
With icing.
So a prairie is like
that's what I was thinking. With icing.
But a plain doesn't have to have anything on it. A flat plain can be completely devoid of vegetation of any variety.
All right.
But I'll give you 9 points because you did really well. And it's the flat versus undulating contour. Is the major difference between
for those? By the way, I'd just like to add that for those of you who know what planes are all about, living perhaps in the midst of them, that I read an article recently where someone tested the proposition: are the plains of the Midwest as flat as a pancake? They actually took a pancake, they measured it, and they said, "Well, if a pancake were blown up to the size of the Midwest, which would be smoother?" It turns out that the plains are actually more flat. Than a pancake.
The kind of information you don't get anywhere else on public radio.
So,
only on Says You.
It'll be pancake.
Not flat
inflation.
Ass. Flatter than.
And finally, Flash, try this one. What's the difference between marooned and stranded?
Marooned
and stranded.
Well, there could be a lot of differences. One might be an issue of time. Where maroon means you're out there for a long period of time, where stranded could be a short time duration. There could be a geographic definition where maroon means you're somewhere where, like an island or somewhere where there's no visible means of getting off, whereas stranded is, you're left somewhere, but at least you're not out of contact with the rest of the world.
And that's exactly right. Very good.
Really?
10 points.
Oh.
Ha!
Clean win.
That is right on the money. To be marooned means to be put ashore, literally, to be put ashore on a desolate island or coast, and figuratively, to be punished by separation from society and companions.
Yeah, but it's more than that. When pirates did it, they knew you were going to die because they would even put you on a tidal, you know, like a sandbar
exactly.
that they knew was going to be washed away. That was it.
It was meant as a punishment or a sentence. It really had that
kind. You can't be marooned at an airport.
Don't you also have to be marooned? But you can't maroon yourself. You can
right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Accidentally
yes.
marooned, but
yes,
you can be accidentally stranded.
Well, yes, that is true.
Right.
Whereas stranded literally means to be run aground, and figuratively it means to be left without transportation or other means of escape. You can be stranded in New York City. Let's go on to round four, which is Tony's team's chance to have a little fun at Webster's expense. One of you will correctly define the following word, two will bluff. 10 points, Carolyn, if your team can find the rose among thorns. Take a few moments to come up with a definition for the word solander.
Solander.
S-O-L-A-N-D-E-R. Solander. Folks? Says you coming to our town? Where can I find old Shones? Who played that music I heard last week? So many questions, all answered on our website at saysyou.net. There you can find tickets to tapings, Dally on the Daily Dispatch, or access our complete archive. You can contribute a question to the show and absorb ridicule on a national scale. This and more at saysyou.net. That's SAYSYOU. Briefly, Says You pauses. We'll be right back. You again for free on any of the stations that stream our show. Just follow the High Definitions radio stations link on our website, find a convenient time, and listen again and again. For copies of this show or any other in our history, you can find downloads at saysyou.net. Just follow that show downloads link and find high quality copies available. That's saysyou.net. SAYSYOU. The Revival Quintet. Thank you very much, folks, for giving us a little time with the word solander. We will go first to Tony Khan.
Well, as we know, to philander is to play fast and loose with someone else, and to solander is just to... Well, how about a rocky heap on top of a hill, then?
A rocky heap on top of a hill.
A rocky heap on top of a hill.
You remember Rocky Heap.
Come on.
Rocky. Karate.
Rocky.
He's Uriah's cousin.
He's from Ohio, yes.
The one who boxes.
The one who boxes. Uriah's punch-drunk cousin.
Rocky.
Rocky Heap. A rocky heap on a hill.
A rocky heap on the top of a hill is a salander. All right. Francine, what say you?
Also of the earth, actually.
Also what?
Of the earth, actually.
A solander is actually a Swedish custom, and it is a share of land given to the firstborn son.
A share of land given to the firstborn son is a solander.
Yes, solander.
Swedish.
Yes.
Flash, what say you?
Well, solander is not really a noun, it's a verb, and it's actually a special subset of the concept to sequester. So to solander is to hide something, but it's to hide it in a special way. You know how you sort of hollow out the middle of a book and everything and then hide something and everything? So to solander is to hollow out a book and sequester something inside it.
Hmm. To hollow out a book and hide something inside of it is to solander. So it is either to hollow out a book and to hide something inside it. I've seen that in the movies. To a share of land given to the firstborn Swedish son. Or a rocky heap on the top of a hill. That's the choice. Carolyn?
It sounds like so many things. Salamander, colander.
Coleander.
Pander.
We can keep going on.
Or sun. I think of sun, you know, the sun. And then I hear Francine talk about sun. And I think ander is kind of a Swedish name. But what if somebody doesn't have land? What do they give their son?
Fish.
Fish.
Fish followed by grog. Lots of grog. Make him forget the land he didn't get.
Wait, okay. And Tony, the rocky heap on a hill. Don't we know about rocky heaps? We've done cairns and this, that, and the other. Unless it's supposed to be a rocky heap that catches the sun in some way. Or to Flash's definition.
Which is to sequester.
To hollow out a book.
Hollow out a book.
People do that. They hollow out a book and hide stuff in it. And he might have just thrown in the sequester to throw us off, so we would think...
Oh, boy, Carolyn.
I might go with Flash because I think he was trying to throw us off with sequester. And make us think he was just kind of reaching into his, you know, attorney's bag of verbiage.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of like that. Well, there should be a word for that.
There should be a word for that.
So.
There should be.
Okay. All right, Flash.
We're going with Flash.
Flash, they think that solander means to hollow out a book, hide something inside.
No, we're just going with Flash.
Okay.
Yeah. We don't care about his word.
Oh. Flash, they don't even remember what you said, Flash. But,
that's right. That's
but
okay.
They're going with you, should they have.
Just to, you know, do that little thing.
Yeah.
Solander, a book hollowed out in the middle of
Excellent.
Tough one to fool him with.
My Twinkie.
Strangely enough, it's a Swedish word, and it's an eponym.
It's a homonym?
It's an eponym.
It's an eponym.
Yes.
You know that you can take Ipecac for that.
Okay, I'll leave it at that then.
What is it eponymous with?
Mr. Solander.
Mr. Solander.
Who actually, you know, hollowed out the books and hid things. Actually, he was a chemist, I believe, or... a scientist, and he would hide formulas inside.
Yeah. It's a jewelry box.
Oh, really?
Yes, and it is a hollowed out book. You put it on the shelf, and when the robber comes, he doesn't think that that's where your diamonds are.
Well, now you know what it's called.
So he takes your furniture.
No, and said straight to the silverware. That's all.
This week's suggestion for a spotlight round comes from Carol Merrill of Los Angeles, California. Incidentally, if you're the same Carol Merrill, we loved you on Let's Make a Deal. She says her favorite rounds are the food categories, especially one she remembers from our Atlanta shows many years ago. Well, Carol, we're happy to make your wishes for more culinary categories come true with this week's Spotlight Round. From Season 5, Barry Nolan joins us for Food for Thought. Please describe the following culinary items and experiences. Carolyn,
experiences.
Pemmican.
P-E-M-M-I-C-A-N, pemmican.
Well, that was what the Native Americans used for food, dried bits of beef and berries and whatnot.
You know, she even got the berries.
Yeah.
10 points. Very good. That's exactly right. You know what the berries were used for?
Tell me what the berries
were used for. Well, allow me a moment. It is a Native American presentation of hard-preserved buffalo or deer or whatever meat, dried into strips, pounded into a powder, and mixed with melted fat. They use the berries for seasoning and flavoring.
Or drywall.
A presentation of beef jerky?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. And the flavoring and the berries are also used for preservative. So that's...
Well,
you wouldn't think it had to be preserved, but I guess evidently it does.
It could be used for alcohol more.
Tony?
Yes.
I loved finding out about this. Isinglass.
Isinglass?
Yes. Isinglass. Isinglass.
Wasn't that the guy who informed on his sister, the Rosenbergs?
Yes, it is.
Wasn't that her brother,
Isinglass, yes.
Isinglass. He had a dish named after him.
McCarthy Isinglass.
Yeah. Right, the McCarthy Isinglass.
Isn't that a kind of drizzled sugar decorative
no,
thing?
It is no, it is not. Although I know why you would think that. Anyone remember the song Surrey with the Fringe?
I do.
Yeah, right.
And the Isinglass curtains you can roll right down.
Yeah, that's a secondary definition of this word.
So it's edible window pane.
Yeah.
We refer to that as stomach treatment.
It's peanut brittle without the peanuts or the brittle.
You know what? Give them 4 points for peanut brittle without the brittle. Yes. We'll go to the other side. Carolyn
is a substance from the stomach of a whale.
Oh, you're so close.
That's ambergris, isn't it?
From the liver of a whale. From the pancreas of a whale.
Just get out of the whale once
you're corduroy of a whale.
It's a fish thing.
It is exactly a fish thing.
It's a fish thing.
It's a semi-transparent whitish gelatin made from sturgeon bladder.
Mm.
Right.
Oh, gotta love that.
Used as a clarifying agent or gel.
With sturgeon bladder windows, you can roll right down.
Yeah.
And nobody can see in.
And nobody wants to.
The secondary definition is mica. The element mica is
mica.
The secondary, and I think that's where the Isinglass curtains come
from. I thought it would be the caviar of curtains.
Arnie, sashimi. S-H-I-C-H-I-M-I. Sashimi.
Not quite sushi.
Sashimi.
It's S-H-A. S-H-A.
It's
S-H-A-S-H.
I-M-I.
It's raw fish. It's not the sushi that's rolled up with
rice
and
it's
nori
the raw,
and everything.
This is something else.
This is
actually spelled S-H-I-C-H-I-M-I.
Shishi.
I point out this is from the Oxford Companion of Food.
Oh, the English are very well known for their food.
Yes.
I'd go there in a heartbeat.
Arnie, what you mean is the food is unforgettable.
Yeah.
Food is unforgettable.
It is edible origami.
Edible origami. I'll go with that. Right. It's Italian dental floss.
It is it. Right. I go to the other side. Any help?
Of course not.
It's a six-pack of soy sauce.
No.
Give me
You're
a
exactly right.
Really?
Yes.
No. You're kidding.
It means seven flavors in Japanese, and it is a mixture of seven spices. It has chili peppers, and it has sancho pods, which I always thought was a character out of Don Quixote.
Exactly.
No idea what that is.
Sancho Panza.
Francine.
Moving right along.
Yep. Muesli. M-U-E-S-L-I.
Oh, give me something hard like sashimi. Yeah. Why don't you? It's Swiss breakfast cereal.
Am I the only person in the room that didn't know this?
Yeah. Who doesn't know muesli? You don't know muesli?
I just thought, here's a funny little word.
Yeah.
Richard, the hills are alive with the sound of music. Yeah.
They have boxes of it. What's next, grape nuts? What do you got?
I personally apologize to the American public for my ignorance. I had never heard it, and I thought, oh, what an interesting word.
Never heard of this.
Okay, Paula, you're so smart. Head cheese.
Head cheese?
Do you know what that is?
Yeah.
You know, I did know, but now it's... Wait a minute, head cheese.
Yeah. So let's start with the fact that it's not cheese.
I know it's not cheese. I know it is.
You boil down the head of an animal, like a calf, and you get all the scraps and the gel, and then, somebody actually eats it eventually.
All that muesli and sashimi.
Because it's sort of gelatinous, and it's got some meat in it and some nutrient.
And just what culture invented this?
And you form it into something that looks like a pate.
I could go into a lot more detail, but why?
10 points.
10 points, very good. That is head cheese.
It's what the...
Don't eat it.
The meaty bits from the head of a calf, a pig, or a sheep, and I don't want to go into the
right. We knew that.
Don't go there.
Barry, Lady Baltimore.
Oh. A Lady Baltimore. Yeah. Oh, that sounds so familiar.
I don't know.
Lady Baltimore, is this is a dessert?
It is, in fact.
One of the things it has is that whipped creamy-like stuff.
Oh, you know, I think we've gone about as deep as we're going to go over there. Okay.
I think if you take a lady finger and you put it in a leg of lamb.
Actually, exactly right. 10 points for that. Very good.
No.
Yes.
10 points.
It's a lady finger and a leg of lamb. How much better are you going to do than that?
How about the right definition?
Lady fingers and pudding? No.
No. I think we're going to. It is a cake.
Coconut.
With coconut.
I don't think it has coconut.
Raisins.
Any help from the audience?
Raisins.
It is a white cake with raisins, cherries, pineapples, and nuts in the frosting. That's our spotlight round for this week. If there's a memorable moment you haven't heard in years, let us know. We'll send our crack research team into the archives and do our best to find your favorite. You can let us know your choice by following the Got a Good One link on our webpage at sayu.net. That's SAYSYOU. That's our look back. Now, back to the present. I want to take a minute and introduce our scorekeeper. Kelsey Myers is keeping score for us tonight. Thank you very much for doing that, Kelsey. We have explored music many times on this program, but never in 10 years have we tackled jazz. Tonight, with the help of the Revival Quintet, we take our first foray into America's music. From the following short themes played by the Revivalists, please tell me the name of the work, and if you can, the artist. Carolyn, first with you.
Folks,
could you give us a short theme for Carolyn?
I know this. This is like at every wedding. Oh, tell me, please.
Satin Doll.
Yeah. Thank you.
Satin Doll by?
Duke Ellington, huh?
Duke Ellington? Did you say Duke Ellington?
I said Duke Ellington.
Then you get 10 points. Very good. Thank you very much, folks.
Are there words to that?
Yeah.
There are. Yeah? Tony, see if you can tell us the name of the following piece of music and the artist who performed it.
Take the C train, I think.
No, not take the C train.
That's not a Glenn Miller piece.
Everybody
the
must
whole
stop humming
audience
right
is
now.
Humming the song. Not Glenn
it's
Miller.
It's not Glenn Miller, and it's not before. I don't know.
Well, we got to pass.
Benny Goodman.
Yeah.
Could be.
I think the other side may know because there's some gymnastics going on.
Radio.
Over there. Other side, do you know?
Savoy.
Oh, you said Benny Goodman?
I did say Benny Goodman.
She said Benny Goodman.
Oh, well, then three points for the artist. And can you give us
the
a little rendition?
The tape will show that I did say Benny Goodman.
Arnie, let's try this one. We move forward a little bit in time. See if you can tell us the name and the artist.
Let me play it. Take five, Dave Brubeck.
Oh. 10 points. I guess they are getting the easy ones. Francine, we move forward a little bit more in time with this piece.
Watermelon Man by Mongo Santa Maria.
Well, there is a performance by Mongo Santa Maria, but isn't it?
Quito Puente.
Cannonball did a version of it too, but I think it was Mongo that wrote it.
You think it was Mongo that wrote it? You know what? Was it Herbie Hancock? Yeah, it's Herbie Hancock. Huh. Let's move forward even more in time, Paula, with this classic piece of jazz. See if you can tell us the name of the song. Oops.
Oh, that's, wait a minute. It'll come to me. Miles Davis.
Yeah, this is how
we're going into Miles Davis.
You are, it is Miles Davis. Do you know the name?
Is this Freddie the Freeloader?
No.
It's,
Oh, you're almost there. His head is in his hands, ladies and gentlemen.
Got that.
Yes. Something blue.
You have that.
So blue.
Blue,
so.
Blue.
You know what?
That's the album it's on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, okay,
I got the album cover.
Yeah.
He's got the album cover.
I got the album cover also. I was channeling that.
I don't think he's going to get it. We're going to get, you got two-thirds of the answer, so you got 6 points so far. Does the other side know?
No, they don't.
Does the audience know? So what?
So what?
So what? But Miles Davis is right. And finally, Flash, the hardest one of them all. See if you can tell us. We'll give you 10 points for either the artist or the name of the work.
Okay.
That's got to be...
Now, I just got to say something to you.
Yes.
Is this April 1st? Is that an April Fool's joke or something?
Why don't we give that to him a little bit more extended?
Yeah,
just a little bit more extended.
Oh, yeah, I know it now.
Yeah, that's
it. But I'm going to let my colleagues say, where is it?
Well, at first I thought it was Satin Dill by...
Satin Dill, yes.
By Pickles Finkelstein.
You're right, but it's not that.
Suddenly I heard Mingus. I heard Mingus.
It is not Mingus, so...
No. Okay,
really?
Let us think. Okay.
It's the toughest one of them all.
Well, that's
really
because it's a very obscure
category.
Piece that was...
Anyone on the other side know?
Is it Thelonious Monk?
It is not Thelonious Monk. Anyone in the audience?
Giant Steps, John Coltrane.
John Coltrane. Good, you guys. Thank you very much for the revival quintet. We gave your side an awful time on that round, Tony, and it cost you in the end. But with 82 points, a great showing for Carol and Faye Fox's team, winners this week. Congratulations. That is all we have time for this week. Thanks so much to David Lusher, Ed Goist, and all the folks here at WYSU at Youngstown State University. My co-writer is Philip Salkin. Zachary Moore is our associate producer. Antonio Oliart faithfully records. Once every few weeks, we remind you that this show is best when we get your questions, when we get your comments, and most of all, when you show up. Thanks, Youngstown, for showing up. See you next week. Says You in Youngstown, Ohio, is made possible by the good folks at WYSU-FM in Youngstown. Benjamin, give him the skinny.
Says You, created and produced by Pippin and Finch, Boston.
This is 90.3 WPLN, Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule for all of our program channels and listen to any of them live online at WPLN.org.